to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, one and all, from Memphis, Tennessee to around the world, welcome back to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of the award-winning Political Cesspool radio program, Saturday evening, March 27th it is, and I am James Edwards, your host, joined now by Winston Smith, my co-host. We're going to be doing a little musical chairs tonight in the studios of AM 1380 WLRM. Here in Memphis, our flagship studio, first hour, we had Keith Alexander sitting right to me. And now we have Winston Smith to the left of me. A little later on, we will have Eddie the Bombardier Miller in front of me. And by the end of the night, you will have heard from four of the five Political Cesspool regular hosts. The only person with the night off is Bill Rowland. But I am overjoyed to have Winston back with me this evening. And we've got a lot of topics prepared for you during the second hour. Keep in mind, as I mentioned at the very top of the show, that we have had a change in programming tonight on the cesspool. Originally scheduled to appear this evening were Richard Spencer and Dr. Paul Gottfried. Because of the passing of Obamacare, we have asked them to come on next week so we can make room for Dr. Stanley Monteith, who will be appearing with Eddie the Bombardier Miller during the third hour as we try to make more sense, or as much sense as we can, of the dawn of socialized health care here in America. Well, socialized health care for some. We'll talk more about that with Dr. Stan. Anyway, that being said, the stage now being set, I welcome again Winston here as we start the second hour. And Winston, I don't know if you were listening in on the first hour as you prepared for tonight's broadcast, but one of the issues that Keith Alexander and I raised was something that I would like for you to comment on. You know, sometimes there's just a story so horrific, so salacious, that I have to bring it up a couple of times on any given program. And this one for me this week was just Sarah Palin's absolute sellout. Well, I mean, we all know that she's just playing the game. We all know that she's there to keep non-establishment conservatives somewhat involved in the Republican apparatus. What I mean to say is she's there to pose as a legitimate, genuine article right-winger, where we know that she's anything but that. And the latest proof of that was the endorsement of John McCain. And I'm going to read this story to you, Winston, and then allow you to share your thoughts. And I read now from the Council of Conservative Citizens website. 2 years ago, John McCain transformed Sarah Palin overnight from an obscure first-term Alaska governor into a national celebrity when he picked her as his vice presidential running mate. Now Palin is apparently repaying the favor, putting her prestige on the line in an effort to help the four-term Arizona senator overcome his toughest re-election challenge ever. The two campaigned together Friday for the first time since they lost the presidential race in 2008. Basically, what you have here, Winston, is that Sarah Palin says, what is she saying here? Remember the freedom fighters who protested against tyranny and big government, and that's what we're doing here today. As if John McCain is just this hardcore conservative who's going out there fighting for the Constitution, fighting for God and country. And so, you know, how anybody could be so naive or so ignorant as to believe that there is any shred of hope remaining that the Republican Party is going to try to reconquer some of the institutions that it helped conservatives lose, or that it's going to in any way try to turn the rudder back towards the right, is just fooling themselves. And now you have Sarah Palin. You know, J.D. Hayworth, who is McCain's challenger, he isn't the best. In fact, he's not that good, but he's a hell of a lot better than McCain. And yet now you have, and McCain, as we said at the top of the show, Winston, probably the most liberal, the most Marxist man in the Republican Party. And here's Palin, with her Tea Party credentials, joined at the hip, saying, vote for this man. He is a Tea Partier. He stands up for the Tea Party. He is the guy that you need to rally behind. Winston, long story short, what do you make of it?
I agree with you, James. It's a sham, and the American people see this. They're still playing the game, as are all of the garden variety these days. a couple of notable exceptions. But hello? I'm having a little audio difficulty here. Winston, are you still? Can you still read me on your side of the headset? Okay, apparently we've lost Winston. But anyway, he'll be back on. We just got to readjust some of the settings here in the studio, and that happens from time to time. That's when we need people to support us. It ain't Fox News here, but we got the kind of commentary that you're not going to find anywhere else. That's for sure. We're waiting for Winston to readjust his equipment over there. But I know we talked about this at length there during that first hour, and I hate to resuscitate something that we've already covered, but sometimes in doing so, and through the repetition, you're really able to hammer on a point that I think just has to be beaten into the brains of some very good people out there who are just absolutely missing the mark. I mean, we have so many people out there who fundamentally, and I know I say this a bit, but they fundamentally do agree with the mission statement of, say, this radio program, which I believe is certainly a communicative nexus in the America First movement. I mean, we certainly showcase a lot of the leading thinkers and pundits and activists that are out there on a wide variety of issues that I think serve as a litmus test in proving whether or not you are a paleoconservative or a neoconservative or worse yet, a liberal or Marxist or so on and so forth. So I think, you know, if you can, you don't have to agree. Listen, this is another problem conservatives have. Then you have to agree with each other on every little thing in order to be able to work together. I don't think that's the case, and in fact it's not the case, and that shouldn't be the case. But you ought to have some fundamental alliances, some fundamental issues with which you can come together and work together. And I think there are a lot of people out there who do fundamentally agree with this radio program, and they are misappropriating their time, money, and effort in supporting not only the Republican Party, but the people within the Republican Party that lead you to believe that they are working to reform the Republican Party in a more conservative image, people like Sarah Palin. And Sarah Palin is not your friend. You know, she would not be on all the major radio programs. She wouldn't be a fixture on national television every single night of the year if she were truly interested in restoring the Constitution and combating the establishment. I mean, you know that. And if you know that, then why do you continue to embrace her as Tea Party people? You know, I have a real love-hate relationship with the Tea Party people. I see, on one hand, it provides us with one of the greatest opportunities that I've seen in my lifetime to make a tangible difference, to really make an impact. I think the Tea Party has the numbers to truly do a great amount of good in very short order if they get their act together. But we have cases, documented cases that we've talked about on this radio program, many, many instances in which we have seen local Tea Parties taken over by people who are absolutely leftists, and they're trying to be politically correct, and being politically correct is never the answer if you want to accomplish anything. And then on a national scale, you have people like Sarah Palin who have co-opted the Tea Party for her to, you know, benefit her own personal career, and she is now, I guess, nominated herself to serve as the spokesman for the Tea Party movement, and she's going on all these talk shows, all these television appearances, saying some right things. And then what does she do? She now, you know, she endorses John McCain as someone that really represents everything that the Tea Party movement is all about. So I don't think we've said anything in this hour that we said differently during the first hour. I did want to get some of Winston's take on the matter. But I do bring it up again just because it is so sickening. And I've seen it happen. I'm only 30 years old, and I've seen it happen so many times in my short decade of experience in this movement. I know a lot of people who are listening to this show go back to the Wallace campaigns and the Goldwater campaigns and maybe even before that. So I know y'all have been disappointed many more times than I have, but I just hate to see
a movement with potential be subverted by people like Palin and McCain and some of these local politically correct activists who don't want to, you know, they want to take over the world, but they don't want to be called a name. I mean, they're hardcore, you know. They're going to get in there and you know, preserve and protect the Constitution, but not if any of their actions result in them being called, you know, a racist by the people who hate them in the media. So we got to, you know, shake these rats from our neck, get in the game, take it over, reclaim America's destiny, hold up Palin's feet.
Way. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
When the truth is found to be...
Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. I think we got our intrepid engineer in the mix there in the commercial break, and we got Winston all fired back up here. So, anyway, enough about the Tea Parties, enough about Sarah Palin. You know what she is. You know the score. We're not going to harp on that anymore, but it is something to think about. Now, Winston, what do you want to give the audience to think about? I know there's some things you brought to the table this evening that should pique their interest, and I want to allow you to present a little bit of that.
Well, before I get into it, James, I would like to make one final comment that I didn't get to make about your last topic.
Follow
and
me.
That's you know what Sarah Palin is doing is it reminds me of what one man said, that the best way to control the opposition is to lead it, and that's what's happening here. And Reverend Pike has it just right, that the Tea Party is being infiltrated by people who are diametrically opposed to the Tea Party, and they are going to take over the leadership of it, and the Tea Party will go the way of most most third parties, and it'll be a pathetic footnote in the history of American politics.
It's sort of like the Minutemen Project. I mean, they've used this play. They've run the same play out of the same playbook for I guess 60 years, if not longer. I mean, at least in terms of, you know, deconstructing any legitimate conservative organization or conservative movement. It's the same thing every time. I mean, you just get the leadership either becomes corrupt or sells out or they get infiltrated. You know, it just seems as though people with so much wisdom and talent and ingenuity, our people, ought to be able to do a better job of safeguarding their organizations. I mean, you know, here we are 6 years into the mix, and the political cesspool hadn't backed down one inch. You don't see us selling out on any issues, so you can hold the line if you have a little bit of decency and integrity and honor, but it just seems as though outside of this radio program and outside of a couple of other organizations that we work with, you know, the rule rather than the exception is that conservative movements sell out. And, you know, the Tea Party movement is right there on the precipice with people like Sarah Palin and Dorsey McCain. But anyway, enough about that. Winston, I know you've got some other things to talk about tonight.
Well, it was a great news week. There are a lot of things that we could talk about. But I came across something that actually took place in February, February 28th. I have an article from the February 28th Washington Post. I don't ever read the Washington Post, but this was brought to my attention by a good political cesspool listener, and the title of the article is "Civil Rights Killings Yield Their Secrets: Review of Decades-Old Cases Producing Many Answers, If Few Indictments." FBI says. This article says begins this way: 3 years after the FBI pledged to investigate more than 100 unsolved civil rights killings, the agency is ready to close all but a handful. Investigators say that they have solved most of the mysteries behind the cases, but few will result in indictments, given the passage of decades, the deaths of prime suspects, and the challenge of gathering evidence. Now, here's what I find. Here's something that really galled me. It's from the person heading the FBI's efforts in this section. Her name is Cynthia Dietl. If I'm mispronouncing that, I'm not intentionally doing so. It's spelled D-E-I-T-L-E, Cynthia Dietl. And she says this: there's maybe 5 to 7 cases we don't know who did it. Some we know, others we know, but can't prove. You hear that, James? They know who did it, but they can't prove it. Well, if you're an investigator, the way you know if somebody did something is by proof. So if there's no proof, how do they know who did it? Well, the fact of the matter is they don't know who did it because they have no proof. But they are going to still pursue these people and drag them through the mud, even though they are of advanced age, because even though they have no proof. Now, this article goes on to say, along the way, officials discovered a more complex story than they had imagined. In nearly one-fifth of the 108 cases, they learned that the deaths had no connection to the racial unrest pulsing through the South at the height of the civil rights struggle. So this paragraph is saying that in nearly one-fifth of the cases that they are investigating, that's 20%, these deaths had no connection whatsoever to what was going on in the South racially. No connection whatsoever. And here are some of the examples this writer gives. In at least one case, the victim had been killed by a relative, but the family blamed the Ku Klux Klan. So you see, that was a fraudulent hate crime report. See, this person was killed by the family, but rather than let that little secret get out, they decided to blame white people for it. They decided to set up this crime and blame white people for it. So these fraudulent hate crimes go back a long, long way, folks, and I've said it before and I'll say it again. During these election cycles, you need to go to these campaigns and demand that these candidates answer the questions, what do they intend to do for white people, and will they support making fraudulent hate crimes themselves? We need to ask that question. So continuing on, after the fraudulent hate crime in that case, the story says, in other cases, a victim drowned or was fatally knifed in a bar fight. Okay? So these are all listed as civil rights deaths, and they're probably still in some column that says these people died during the civil rights era. Two black women registering voters in the hot Mississippi summer died in a car accident. One man died under his mistress, a bedroom secret kept for more than four decades until the Bureau came calling. Now, these people who died like this, their names apparently are etched in the Civil Rights Memorial at the Southern Poverty Law Center's place down there in Alabama. And they didn't die because of anything that white people did, but they're being called civil rights deaths, and that they are worthy of some kind of veneration as victims of what was going on in the South. The story goes on to say, Thomas E. Perez, he's the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, he said, these racially motivated murders are some of the greatest blemishes on our nation's history. Well, if racially motivated murders are great blemishes and deserve a special section of the FBI, why are not the black-on-white murders being investigated with the same vehemence? Well, it's because, obviously, white people do not enjoy that kind of protection. We simply don't. That's the short and simple answer. We don't get that protection. Our government is not protecting us. Now, if these people at the FBI were truly interested in justice, if they were truly interested in righting wrongs, then they would have already arrested the sitting senator, United States Senator from West Virginia, Robert Byrd. He was an operative for the Ku Klux Klan. But they won't go after him because he's not a Southerner. And there's the real aim of this section of the federal government's so-called Justice Department, James, to persecute the South and white Southerners. They won't touch an outed Ku Klux Klan operative from the North, but they'll converge upon an 80-year-old Southern man like a mob of blacks would blitz Kentucky Fried Chicken for a $2 meal deal. And if you think that's an absurd or offensive analogy, then I say you should do a YouTube search for what happens when the Colonel or Popeyes has a special promotion.
We covered on this very program, incident in which a man lost his life. He had been shot at a... Well, we'll have to talk about that in a second. I mean, you're on to something, Winston. You're on to something more than you know. We're going to talk about it more right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool Guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. Big girls
don't cry. Got to address a couple of things that Winston brought to the table last segment. Last things first, he was making mention of the kind of things you can expect at KFCs in certain, let's use the word, diverse neighborhoods. And we had just recently, a couple of weeks ago, covered a story that involved a shooting at a Kentucky Fried Chicken restaurant. And, of course, out of about 50 people in that restaurant, no one actually saw the shooting. But they didn't let the shooting or the man dying on the floor get in the way of them getting their sustenance. And the story... Let it be known that emergency medical services personnel couldn't even get to the dying man because they couldn't beat off the patrons of this fine eatery from their fried chicken. So,
anyway, James.
Yes, Winston.
Please pardon me. I don't mean to do this on the air, but we need to. I'm sure you'll agree that we need to be as accurate as we can. But that did not happen at a Kentucky Fried Chicken. That was at a locally owned establishment, I think. But
right. You're right. It's called the Chicken Hut or something like that. You're right. You're right. I use KFC as like a generic moniker for any fried chicken fast food place. But you're right. I believe it was the Chicken Hut was the actual place. But
we do know chicken was so good that people were dying to get to it.
But it is good to be factual in all details, no matter how small. And I appreciate you for reminding me of that. I was trying to do it recalling my memory. It was a couple of weeks ago, but you're right
That's
about
right.
that. Anyway,
we don't want the Colonel to get the blame for something that didn't happen there.
No, that's right. That's right. Absolutely. KFC.
It's not Chuck E. Cheese, you know.
Yeah, KFC's a little higher brow than that. But another thing you brought up, Winston, is a point that I want to add my two cents on, is you're exactly right, of course. Our people must develop the fervor to go up to elected officials and ask them point blank, without any reservation whatsoever, what do you plan to do to benefit the European American community? This is absolutely socially acceptable when homosexuals or blacks or Jews or anyone else does it. What are you going to do for the Jewish community? What are you going to do for the gays, so-called? What are you going to do for blacks? What are you going to do for this? What are you going to do for this? You know, and they fall on their knees to roll over and exclaim exactly what they're going to do to benefit their lots and lives. But, of course, if our people go up, if the people who built this country, the people who kept this country running go up and ask an elected official what you're going to do to help, you know, white Americans, they look at you as if, you're wearing a hooded suit. So this leads me into something that I was blogging about earlier this week. What is the only group that it's okay to hate? And I found a publication that wrote something that I thought was mightily offensive, and I asked the question, you know, what's the only group that it's okay to hate? And, of course, the answer is rhetorical. It's conservative white people. It's not only okay to hate conservative white people, it's actually encouraged and celebrated. Try to imagine any news media in America talking this way about blacks, Jews, gays, Muslims, etc. And here is what I found. There was an article that read, "Gay panic is sweeping the land. This might be news, except that it's the usual cast of hillbillies, teabaggers, right-wing Christians, and right-wing Christian hillbilly teabaggers," which will be a category on the 2020 U.S. Census form, "who are getting their panties in a wad again." So, I mean, Winston, what would happen if you talk about any of the protected minority groups with that sort of venom and vitriol well, there would be hell to pay, to say the least. But, you know, the reason this kind of hatred is allowed to manifest itself is because we don't have organizations that speak out for our people, and the people who are supposed to be standing up for our people are standing up for everyone but. And this is something that, you know, this show obviously saw as a void to be filled, and we're doing our best to do it, but there's got to be more people doing it, and there's got to be more people. You don't have to be a part of an organization. You don't have to be a leader, per se. You just have to be willing to go out there and do your part, and you can do your part by speaking out unabashedly and without reservation, as I've said, and demanding that our interests also be considered. Winston, your thoughts on all that?
You're exactly right, James. And to those people who, well, first of all, I want to say that, you know, we've put the suggestion out there that when people go to these campaigns, campaign rallies, and they ask those questions of the candidates, what do you intend to do for European Americans, and will you support or introduce legislation to criminalize fraudulent hate crimes, for reporting a fraudulent hate crime? When you ask that, one of two things is going to happen. You're either going to be absolutely ignored. They don't want that kind of question to get out because it's a hard question, and politicians don't like hard questions. It'll force them to take a stand. Or it's going to be picked up all over creation, and it's going to be called a sign of the rampant racism that is sweeping the Tea Party in particular and America in general. Folks, they are going to call you a racist no matter what you say or do. They think that just because you're white, you are automatically a racist. You're automatically the worst of the worst. So really, you've got nothing to lose. They think that about you anyhow. They don't think you have the right to free speech. They don't think you even have the right to draw breath. So you might as well do what is right. Get used to it and just ask the questions. If anybody accuses you of racism, be prepared for it. It's going to happen. They're going to call you a racist anyhow. So just prepare yourself for that.
Well,
the question,
you know,
is going to be asked. Somebody is going to ask that question.
And to give people an example of what you're talking about, Winston, I mean, the Obama camp was calling John McCain a racist. I mean, everyone is a racist if they oppose, you know, communism in any shape, form, or fashion, or if they're not absolutely doing everything they can to redistribute the wealth from, you know, Americans to the third world and so on and so forth. I mean, basically, bottom line is, you said it, Winston, in one sentence, if you're white, they're going to call you a racist no matter what your credentials are, no matter what your ideology is. So just be prepared to brush that off, because racism is a Marxist construct. It's a shut-up word whose only purpose is to stifle debate and to get you off the track and off, debating whether or not you are this, that, or the other, rather than accomplishing any certain goal you might have. So
they're going to try to put the focus on you. They're going to follow the Alinsky model of isolating you and caricaturing you, and that's the way they operate. So just expect it and do the right thing. Ask the question.
Now, there you go. And, you know, and if more people look at us, if more people followed our lead, this country would be, well, I think, much better off. I mean, that's my opinion, and as long as I'm entitled the right to free speech, which I guess is hanging by a thread, you know, I'm going to continue to express my opinion, but that is my opinion. And you should follow our lead because, you know, 6 years of success on this radio program hasn't hurt us in any way. I mean, we've been called all the names, but we still go to work every day. We still have families that love us and good friends and good support, and we live good, healthy Christian lives, and we celebrate life. And so, you know, you can't ask for much more than that. Basically, what I'm saying is, you know, we've done it all. We've spoken out as much as anyone can speak out, and we're still doing quite well. So, you know, you're not the worst price you're going to pay is being called a name. And if that's the worst price you got to pay, you got to ask yourself, you know, am I doing what I should be doing? Am I doing as much as I can? If that's what's keeping me from joining in a battle so righteous, you know, am I really honoring our ancestors who fought to the death to win us our independence in this country? Or am I really honoring them by allowing the fear of being called a name to keep me from following in their footsteps? And I think that's the question everyone needs to ask. And if the answer is, you know what, I'm not going to allow these shut-up words to control my destiny anymore, and I am going to get engaged, then, Winston, I think we can have a great turnaround very quickly. I mean, you know, it sounds simple, and I know we say it a lot, but the only people keeping America in its current state is white conservatives. I mean, we allow ourselves to be muzzled. We allow ourselves to be changed by words. I mean, it's crazy. I've never seen such a thing before. But then again, that's just me. I guess we're getting... Well, we still got a couple of minutes to break. I do want to say this, though. I do want to say this because we have a moment here, and I want to take moments where we can because we normally are so chock full with programming on this show that we have very little time to work in certain programming announcements, and I try to work them in every now and then. But do remember, ladies and gentlemen, this is your last chance to get that autographed Hutton Gibson book. We're hawking it hard and heavy here because the offer ends on March the 31st. March the 31st, a couple of days from now. If you haven't sent in a donation online at thepoliticalcesspool.org, or if you haven't postmarked your check or money order to this program by then, you're going to lose the opportunity to have a great book which talks about the infiltration of leftist perverse ideology in our churches, and this is the issue that Hutton Gibson writes about in his book, The Enemy Is Still Here. It's yours for a donation of $100 or more between now and March 31st. And of course, all of that money goes to keeping us on the air and keeping us growing. So we're going to take a break and talk more about that right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the Political Cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right. As I mentioned a couple of times earlier this evening, during tonight's third hour, we're going to be joined by Eddie the Bombardier Miller, our regular TPC co-host. Eddie has a background in the medical field. Not only was he a combat medic, he has also spent a lifetime as a registered nurse, and he will be talking about Obamacare. And to round out the program tonight, Eddie and I will be joined during that third hour by Dr. Stanley Monteith. So the third hour is all about socialized healthcare, and to help set the stage for Bombardier Eddie, Winston Smith, my co-host for this hour, has a related story. And Winston, with that being said, I'm going to toss it over to you. Well, as Winston, a little programming difficulty once again here with Winston's mic. I tell you, we got to get somebody in here to fix this stuff from time to time. But while we wait on Winston to call back in, I want to share a quick story with you, completely unrelated to everything I was talking about. But I don't know if you'll remember, and you'd have to be a pretty astute listener of this program to remember the city of Farmers Branch, Texas. I think we covered a story, Farmers Branch, Texas, back before we ever became syndicated. Anyway, the Dallas suburb of Farmers Branch, like many cities in the Dallas area, has been overrun with illegal aliens. A few years ago, and this is when we covered it, when conservative George Bush and the conservative GOP Congress refused to do anything about this invasion, the city council of Farmers Branch, Texas, passed a law making it illegal to rent homes or apartments to illegal aliens. Well, it makes sense, doesn't it? Unfortunately, now a federal judge has thrown it out. Why? Because it's the federal government's job to enforce laws against illegal immigrants, and the Republicans and Democrats in Washington refuse to do so. Well, that's too bad, and there's nothing we can do about it. And the story reads, a Farmers Branch ordinance banning illegal immigrants from renting apartments in the city is unconstitutional, federal judge ruled today. U.S. District Judge Jane J. Boyle of Dallas found that the ordinance was an attempt to enforce U.S. immigration laws, something the judge said only the federal government can do. So there you have it. The federal government, the Republicans and Democrats, aren't going to do their job in protecting the American citizenry from this illegal alien invasion. So you had one small town near Dallas who had the guts to do something about it. They passed their own laws. The mayor and board of aldermen in Farmers Branch, Texas, passed their own laws to protect their people from illegal aliens. And what happened? A federal judge rules it out and says, that's the government's job. That's the federal government's job to do. You can't do it. Well, if that's not unconstitutional, I don't know what is. But then again, when did laws ever get in the way of the new America? Winston, back over to you.
James, it's interesting that that federal judge would say that. Oh, I want to say that the state legislature there in Texas ought to say, well, federal judge, we really don't give a rodent's backside about what you think about our law. We're going to support our counties. We're going to support our towns. If they pass an ordinance, then that's their business, not yours. And if this federal judge wants to make a fuss about something being the federal government's job, let me remind him of a story that's out there now. It's about how the federal government has this Energy Star program where a product can be submitted to receive an Energy Star rating from the federal government, meaning that it's green, it doesn't pollute, and that it's environmentally friendly. Well, the federal government just recently approved 15 phony products for Energy Star rating, including a gasoline-powered alarm clock. So this is the same federal government that says, we'll take care of the immigration laws, and we're going to run your health care. So that judge has been either drinking his bathwater or breaking rocks with his head if he thinks the federal government is going to be able to do anything right.
Well, it was an interesting follow-up to a story, Winston, that we covered, I believe, back in 06 or 07. And unfortunately, it appears as though the federal government has trumped state rights and local law enforcement yet again. But, Winston, that was not intended to be the topic of this segment. You were going to set the stage for Bombardier Eddie and Dr. Stan with a discussion of health care or something related to it.
Yes. Another big story this past week, in the wake of Obamacare being shoved down everybody's throats, is apparently some legislators, congressmen, received some verbal abuse. Some had received death threats, and some had been called bad names. Those poor people. They get called bad names, James.
I can believe that a United States congressman, I mean, that must be tough to be a U.S. congressman and have to suffer an uncomplimentary email. I tell you, they've got it rough up there.
Well, they were whining about this after this past year. They have spent calling people who opposed this socialist takeover. They've called us every vile name you can think of, and Barney Frank is upset because someone calls him an accurate racial gay slur. Well, he deserved it. Anyhow, James, it was a big deal, and now these religious groups have signed on to a civility covenant and other garbage. They can get the non-racist label, much like the gasoline-powered alarm clock got the Energy Star label. But my question, James, is how many of these occurrences were faked? We know that these people will fake attacks on them. We know that they will fake hate crimes. We know that they will fake anything as long as it gives them a chance to say they were victims. So I don't put it beyond any congressman to put a plant in an audience to call this a racial slur or a gay slur in order to try to...
Absolutely. Keep going on, but I just wanted to remark that is something that happens all the time, and you know it does.
Mm-hmm. And besides, James, if the calling was real, I think it's understandable the rage that these people are feeling. They have no representation. They rightly believe that they have no representation because the majority of Americans didn't want this legislation, and yet their representatives voted for it anyhow. So these people are enraged, and I can certainly understand why they would vent their anger verbally. After all, others, when they weren't being represented properly, they took up arms. So as far as I'm concerned, James, these people are getting off light. And besides that, James, death threats, name calling, we at the political cesspool, we get death threats almost every week, and we report them, and we get called the most filthy names you can imagine. And there's one Jew out there who keeps sending James and me very hate-filled, venomous emails calling us the filthy saints, making the most ludicrous of accusations. And, you know, we get this kind of thing all the time. And what those congressmen say they endured, and I endure in quotation marks, it was polite and mild compared to what we at the political cesspool get every week.
And we suffer that, you know, what suffering it is, being called a name. And again, that's about the worst that's ever happened to us. But, you know, getting death threats is always a little bit disconcerting until, you know, you get so many it almost becomes commonplace. But, you know, we have to go through all this without, you know, Cadillac, you know, without all these benefits that the congressmen and senators receive, without a lifelong pension, without lifelong health care benefits, and without all of these things. And here they are crying up there that honest, hardworking, tax-paying American citizens would be opposed to their socialistic tendencies. And so, you know, you're right, Winston. You see this kind of stuff, and you compare it to what real Americans have to go through and what pain and suffering we have to endure based upon the actions of these traitors up there in Washington. And their whining just doesn't really impress me whatsoever. What they're suffering, you know, getting emails from people who don't appreciate what they're putting on them. Really a little short on sympathy, Winston. I don't know. Maybe I'm just cold-hearted.
No, you're not cold-hearted, James. You're a realist, and it's time for these people to grow up. If they're going to be in this arena, they are going to endure some harsh language. James, we get called anti-Semite. We're called anti-Semites because we object to a huge menorah being set up on the White House lawn every Christmas time when our people are not even allowed to erect a simple nativity scene in the town square. But we're called anti-Semites when we object to that. We're called Nazis who want to gas 6 million Jews. We get called the worst names imaginable, people, and by extension, you get called those names too, our listeners, because they are simply attacking us and attacking you at the same time, because we have the voice. And if you think like us, if you talk like we do, then they are directing their venom at you. And as I said, these are the people who put us in this position. We entrusted our freedom to them, and they voted it down the tubes, and we have no representation, and they're going to get mad when we say, when we call them a traitor.
Well, Winston, third hour of tonight's installment,
there's our we got to take a break.
Your way right after these messages.
They call the rising sun.